Welcome to What Makes Up Your Mind? Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health from the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University School of Medicine. This is your invitation to meet the faculty dedicated to understanding our most complex organ, committed to curing mental illness, and inspired to help create a healthier, thriving world. Hello, glad to have you join us for another mini pod in our CNIX mini series on What Makes Up Your Mind. I'm Jane McMillan. We're taking this opportunity to introduce you to some of the incredible Stanford psychiatry researchers, specialists, and practitioners who offer their brain-mind expertise to high school students participating in the Clinical Neuroscience Immersion Experience. These are two-week sessions of learning, self-awareness, and perhaps an awakening of interest in a career in mental health. If you listen to our full podcast with CNIX program manager, Dr. Laura Turner-Essel, you've heard about the variety of activities and projects and topics offered. And there are as many Stanford specialists presenting at CNIX as there are topics, from neurosurgery to sleep medicine, which, by the way, is anything but a snooze. You may never have thought of sleep as a critical life skill or a social justice issue, but Dr. Rafael Pelayo brings all of these elements and more together in his thought-provoking presentation. A clinical professor in the Stanford Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, Dr. Pelayo is a specialist in adult and child sleep at the Stanford Sleep Medicine Center. He also serves the department as Associate Director of Community Outreach. Dr. Pelayo has a special interest in the well-being of teens as they face specific challenges to healthy sleep through no fault of their own. Is your interest piqued? Well, hear more now as we're joined by CNIX program manager, Dr. Laura Turner-Essel, and we meet presenter, Dr. Rafael Pelayo.
Well, Rafael, you are one of our veteran presenters every summer in CNIX. We always say, the staff mentors and I, that you have like an encyclopedic knowledge of sleep, all things sleep medicine. But you said that a lot of people don't even recognize sleep medicine as an actual field. So can you tell us a little bit about your area of specialty, about sleep medicine, about your practice and the work that you do with folks, and why you think it's so important?
Well, one of the earliest sleep scientists said that if sleep has no function, the biggest mistake evolution ever made. And we've been sleeping longer than anything else we do as humans. You've been sleeping longer than you've been breathing oxygen. You've been sleeping longer than you've ever been eating any solid food. So it's clearly something that's important to do. And every living animal that's been studied sleeps. So there's some degree of sleep in everything. That it's all around us. Having said that, as a nation, we're sleep deprived. And we think that the ultimate form of self-care for people, for ultimate health, is going to be sleep. And it's been a long time coming since the field began. Stanford was the first place in the world to have a dedicated program to study sleep disorders and to treat them as a condition. There were other, obviously, research facilities, but as a clinical specialty, it began at Stanford in 1970 with Dr. Dement, who was the person who coined the phrase REM sleep. So it's a great place. And the fun thing about it as a physician is that most of the patients get better. It's unusual for patients not to improve. So I used to joke that the sleep clinic was the happiest clinic around because patients are getting better all the time. And people come in with years and years of difficulty with their sleep, with sleep apnea and insomnia. And oh, there are over 80 different sleep disorders, but the vast majority will improve. I always joke that I make many wives happy and send husbands too, because snoring by itself is a common cause of divorce and separations. And you've heard the term sleep divorce, where people sleep separate from each other.
Yeah.
Just
wow,
yesterday,
really? There's a term called sleep divorce. People sleep separate from each other. A lady came in to see me. It was a one-year follow-up, and the first thing she told me goes, my sleep divorce is over. I'm back in bed with my husband. And she was 70 years old, but she was thrilled to be sleeping
again. Oh, my goodness.
After all those
years.
Yeah,
that's a huge deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So neat.
Masks now and machines have been designed specifically for couples. So in the old days, the machines were noisy and would drive people away. But now they've silenced the motors, and they have masks specifically designed for couples so people can snuggle in bed now when wearing their CPAP. It's actually been engineered so the couples can be together. So it's
Wow,
really
that's
nice to see
awesome.
that change.
Very nice. When you're participating in CNIX, Dr. Pelayo, you're talking to teenagers, 14 to 18 years of age. And I don't know, I'm just guessing a teenager may think, sleep? Who needs sleep? I can stay up all night studying or playing video games or whatever. So what do you present to them? How do you connect with this young audience?
Well, to a degree, that's true. But I think it's more than that. And they're more sophisticated than people give them credit for, actually. I started my first research project in sleep was in the 80s in the Bronx in New York City, measuring sleep problems among teenagers. And I visited high schools and junior high schools in the Bronx. And in exchange for them completing a questionnaire that I was handing out, I'd offered to give talks to students. So I had to learn to give talks in front of bored teenagers in New York City. And I always felt that I didn't do enough of that work. So I really welcome the opportunity to be working with CNIX program to get back to talking to high school kids about this stuff. It's important. Most of the time you deal with teenagers, they're sleep deprived. As a population, they're very sleep deprived, and we often will blame it on their culture. But if you talk with them and you tell what's going on, they know that they're not getting enough sleep. You can see it in their eyes. They talk about it. And they think the reason they're not getting enough sleep is they think it's because of the school system, that they have too much homework or the school starts too early. Physiologically, they have a tendency to stay up later at night. It's in their DNA to stay up later at night. Just like people as we get older, people over age 50 have a tendency to go to bed earlier. Those of us who are over that age in our 50s and 60s, it's harder for us to stay up than when we used to. When we're younger, we can stay up earlier. So it makes sense for a tribe of people that some people would be tendency to go to bed earlier, some to go to bed a little bit later. Because if you think about it, if you take a step back, sleeping is the most dangerous thing an animal can do. Sleeping animals are vulnerable to being attacked. So there's a protection in the herd, right? And one of the things that happens is we have our adolescents stay up later at night. And we also have people who are older be able to go to bed earlier and also to sleep lighter. So if you have people as they get older, they complain that they wake up more often, that's maybe a feature, not a bug of our biology. So I think the teenagers are very receptive to the idea, but they feel that they are stuck with a system that forces them not to get enough sleep. They think it's the homework that's keeping them up and the demands, the social demands for them. Yes, of course, social media and things may play a role, but it's not as big a role as you think. Because we've been having sleep-deprived teenagers long before there was the internet.
Interesting, yeah.
One of my favorite things about how you present during the program is that you do a very conversational presentation. It's a lot of back and forth Q&A with the students. And one of the things that always comes up is they're fascinated and really appreciative of your work with the school systems and the kind of policy changes that you've helped to bring about as far as school start times in the state of California and across the country. Can you talk a little bit about the work that still needs to be done?
Thank you. So in the 70s, there were some experiments done at Stanford. And one of the things they're trying to do is take a group of teenagers and fill them with sleep, satiate them with sleep. Like you will fill somebody with food, because they noticed that teenagers were just as a population were sleepy. And when they wrote their research protocols, their protocols failed because they designed experiments that they didn't realize how sleep deprived these teenagers were. So even when they tried to fill them up with sleep, they still wanted more. They couldn't get enough sleep on them. And any parent, when you see your child grow, you're not surprised that they eat more food. They eat a lot when they're teenagers. So why are you surprised that when they are growing, they also need more sleep? As you go through adolescence, especially as you go through growth spurts, there's actually an increased need for sleep. But at the same time, there's a tendency for us to go to bed later. But culturally, there's been this push for the high school to start earlier than the middle schools and for the elementary schools to start even later. In part, it's because public transportation is underfunded. And the thinking was that we could save money by having the kids go to school in shifts and use the same buses. And the thought was, well, the high school kids can get to school on their own, so we're going to start them earlier. It creates a perfect storm, and it's been called a perfect storm. There's a publication called The Perfect Storm that describes these kids needing more sleep. At the same time, biologically, they need to go to bed later, but a school system expects them to get up earlier. And you end up with sleep-deprived kids. And the first thing that happens when you don't get enough sleep is to be irritable and grumpy. So you have these parents of these kids who every evening is an argument about going to bed. And every morning is an argument about getting up and going to school because the kids are needing more sleep. And the first evidence that your kid is not getting enough sleep, that you as a teenager will notice you're not getting enough sleep, is sleeping in on weekends. 8 and 9 year old kids do not sleep in on weekends. 6 year olds do not sleep in on weekends. Parents wish they would, but they don't. But teenagers routinely sleep in on weekends. because they're not getting enough sleep. And if we did that with food, it'd be considered child abuse. You don't say to your kid, listen, Monday through Friday, I'm going to starve you. Saturday and Sunday, you know, you can't, because come Monday, I'm going to starve you again.
Oh,
That's
gosh,
what we do with
yeah.
their sleep. A school teacher, a school principal in Minnesota implemented the first attempt to delay school start times. And they found that when they delayed school start time by 1 hour, people cynically, and that was one of them, I said, cynically, if you delay the school start time by an hour, they're just going to stay up an hour later. The kid did stay up a little bit later, but they ended up getting actually 40 minutes more per sleep per average on that first study. And that translated to improvements in the mood and overall performance of the schools. The kids were happier. Even the custodians were happier in the schools because the kids were less messy. They were eating breakfast before they went into school. There were all these changes that occurred. So from Minnesota, that movement got replicated in other schools in Virginia and other places. But the problem was that every school had their own schedules, and every school district had their own schedules. And you could not make the changes in one district without affecting the other district because the sports teams played against each other. And you change traffic patterns. There were strong links over 20 years of data showing that when you change school start times, whether it be a rich school or poor school, inner city, urban area, rural area, the kids did improvements in their overall health and overall performance in school. But so then the issue became popularized in California. A lady wrote a letter to the editor, an op-ed piece in a newspaper. Lisa Lewis mentioned the links between suicidal behavior and lack of sleep, because people, when they don't get enough sleep, they become impulsive. And this impulsivity and suicidal behavior was independent of mood. These were impulsive kids who were not depressed. And it turns out that Sonoportantino had a brother who died by suicide. So he was looking for anything that he could do as a public official to improve mental health. So he introduced a bill to change the entire state of California to a later school start time. And it was a 6-year process. It was like pushing that rock up the hill and it rolled back down. Finally, Governor Newsom in California became the first person to sign a law to protect the need of teenagers to get more sleep by delaying school start times across the state. And now that law has been replicated in Florida, and other states are now looking into this, including New Jersey and other places like that. And there is a nonprofit organization at a national level, at an international level now also, for anybody listening to this wants to get involved and make changes in their own school, called Start School Later. Because of my involvement in California, I'm now serve on their board also. If you go to their website, they have information and they'll tell you what to do about setting this up and resources available to you.
Thank you for your contributions to that work and for encouraging this next generation of sleep activists. I love that.
Well, as the next generation is sitting in your presentation at CNIX each year, what's the aha moment for them when you're describing maybe them sleeping in on the weekends or needing to, or how they feel during the day in class? Do you kind of see the heads nodding and that connection being made?
Yes, I see that. But I think, Jane, to be honest, I get aha moments myself speaking to them, because I'm so impressed with the students who come to this,
Great.
because they know that we've screwed them up, right? The problems that we're having are societal problems that we've imposed on these kids, and they're aware of it. They're reading about what's happening. So I think we have very sophisticated teenagers coming to this program where they've been reading about the neuroscience and they're asking really good questions. So I'm very impressed with them. I get lots of aha moments with them, and I realize I got to up my game when I talk with them. I can't give this simple lecture. I got to go into a little harder science with them, because they're tracking their sleep. They have smartphones. They're seeing what's happening. So they
Yeah.
know what's going on, and they're being blamed, but because of their phones and other things that they're doing, that's not why they're not sleeping well. They know that they're being scapegoated, and that's not fair to them. An aha moment that they get actually is early on when I ask them to think about how they slept when they were 9 or 10 years old and how they're sleeping now. Do they remember going to bed feeling safe, comfortable, and loved? Do they remember having serenity in their lives and looking forward to sleeping and looking forward to their day and not dreading the night and not being stressed out about, I'm not going to be able to do well in school tomorrow because of this and that, and not having that enough time in my day and falling asleep in class, and what's that doing to them? So that's, I think, for them when they realize this is not their destiny. They've been telling you, sacrifice your time now in high school because it'll pay off later for college, and realize that that is not true, because life does not get simpler as we get older. It gets more complicated. There's more demands of our time as we get
Yeah,
older.
yes.
So by laying out the foundational behavior now, we're going to improve it later. We don't say it's okay to smoke cigarettes now because you can quit later. It's okay to be obese now because you can lose your weight later. We don't say that to them. Why would we do that with their sleep? Sacrifice the sleep now in high school when your brain is developing and growing, because later that life will be better. That's it's not true, and they know it.
I love that you said that you learned from the participants, because we do have awesome participants that come with their own wealth of experience and perspectives and backgrounds, and they have great questions, but they also know more than they think they do. And so it really becomes a dynamic learning environment. We want to give them a lot from the presenters, from our faculty and our experts in different areas, but we also want them to feel like they have something to contribute to the conversation, because we all learn from them. It's really a shared learning experience.
I learn from all the time.
What do you hope they walk away with in terms of their understanding of sleep medicine or anything else that you hope they just take away from the experience of hearing your talk and getting a chance to interact with you?
There's two things I want them to know. First, I want them to understand to prioritize their health, that it's not normal to wake up tired. You should wake up feeling refreshed. Don't leave restaurants feeling hungry. Why should you get out of bed feeling tired? So realizing that they can prioritize their health. And second, that they can recognize sleep problems in the people all around them. These are disorders that run in families. Routinely, my students refer their parents to see me, or their brothers and sisters, or at the college level, they refer their roommates. People come to see us, goes, my roommate heard took your class and they picked up that I have sleep apnea. Or I have insomnia, I thought I was stuck with it forever. I never heard of it before, that those treatments, and now I know. So not only can they help themselves, they help people all around them. That's the things for them to know. We have our outreach projects on purpose because we want them to share what they've learned with the people around them. There's too many people with sleep disorders out there. There's too many sleep deprived people in society for the sleep doctors to take care of it. We really want people to appreciate that they can help themselves and they can help people around them by recognizing these issues. Routinely, students tell me that once they learn about sleep, it changed their lives. You're going to keep sleeping the rest of your life. You're going to be sleeping with other people. There'll be other people around you at all times. So you can learn something in this course that you can take with you forever.
Dr. Rafael Pelayo, Stanford Psychiatry Clinical Professor and Sleep Medicine Specialist. You can see why he is one of the favorite presenters each summer in the CNIX program. If you're interested in getting involved in the move to alter school start times, we have the link to startschoollater.org in our podcast notes, along with more on Dr. Pelayo's work and his book, How to Sleep, The New Science-Based Solutions for Sleeping Through the Night. We also have the link to the Clinical Neuroscience Immersion Experience with all the information you need on how to apply and ask for financial assistance. Meet more of the CNIX presenters by listening to our other mini-pods in this What Makes Up Your Mind mini-series. With Dr. Laura Turner-Essel, I'm Jane McMillan. You've been listening to What Makes Up Your Mind. Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health from the experts in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University School of Medicine. For more information on this program and all of our transformational work, visit us at med.stanford.edu/psychiatry. What Makes Up Your Mind? Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health is a production of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University School of Medicine, a copyright of the Board of Trustees of Stanford University.